Ear Vlogs in the News podcast, episode 13. In today's episode, we have a new solo cannonball run record. Could we get a new Mitsubishi 4000 GT? A car wash worker's act of kindness? A pint-sized driver gets a surprise? 411 on BMW's new 8 Series? What would you give up to keep your pickup truck? And the current and latest updates on Bubba Wallace and Noosegate. And now into the news. First up, Mitsubishi 4000 GT would be welcome, but there's no way it'll be built. It wouldn't be wrong to say that Mitsubishi is a shell of its former self, particularly when you think about some of the cars it produced in the 90s and early 2000s. One of its finest models from that time period was the GTO, also sold as the 3000 GT in some markets and positioned as a rival to the likes of the Nissan 300ZX and Toyota Supra of the day. Although it is very unlikely that a modern-day version of a 3000 GT will ever be produced, designer Matthew Parsons has created a successor dubbed the 4000 GT. It ticks all the boxes you could want from a modern-day sports car. The car shared online through Behance has a rather retro design that includes a lovely mix of straight lines and curved surfaces. For example, the front end includes pronounced arches and a sloping hood. Meanwhile, the sides and rears are dominated by sharp angles. There is a heap of cool design features across the car, these including an LED light bar in place of traditional headlights, wing mirrors with small cameras, a set of massive silver and black wheels, and a pronounced rear wing with a central fin that includes a third brake light. Given the troubles experienced by the Renault-Nissan-Mitsubishi alliance in recent years, it is highly unlikely a vehicle like this would be approved for production. That's a shame because forthcoming Nissan 400Z could serve as a perfect base for a sporty new Mitsubishi. So, if you're listening to this audio podcast on Anchor FM, Apple iTunes, or one of the other podcast platforms, be sure to head on over to my YouTube channel of gearvlogs.com to check out the visuals of this particular story. All links to these articles will be in the show notes down below. And on to our next story. Car wash worker returns stimulus check discovered in trash. Greensville, North Carolina. A car wash worker in North Carolina found treasure amid the business's trash when he discovered the $1,200 IRS stimulus check mixed in with the garbage. Antonio Hernandez was taking out the trash at the Greenville car wash when he spotted the payment in the can. WITN TV quoted his daughter, Michelle Alvarado, as saying, Hernandez and Alvarado were able to track down the recipient, Charles Thompson, who said he was not even expecting to get a check after recently moving to a new address. Quote, I was behind on rent. I work construction, so I work by the day, and I just try to keep going and getting going as the best I can, Thompson told the news station. Quote, that money helped put me ahead and put me on the right track a little bit to get back on my feet, end quote. Hernandez and others added that they were happy to help connect Thompson with the lost funds, even though they and Thompson had no idea how the check ended up at the car wash in the first place. Quote, it's very important for him to receive that check, especially in these uncertain times, Alvarado said. The IRS has been sending out economic impact payments to millions of Americans around the country as part of a rescue package aimed at combating the economic effects of the shutdown amidst the coronavirus pandemic. Now, if you were to find that check, what would you have done? Comment down below. Personally, I think what this gentleman did was two thumbs up. So, let's hear what you guys think in the comments on that story. Pint-sized driver surprises Utah trooper during traffic stop. This is a story that may have been mentioned on Life of Paulos a few weeks back. And this is like a follow-up story to that story he had mentioned. Let's get into the story. Ogden, Utah. A Utah Highway Patrol trooper got a pint-sized surprise when he pulled over a 5-year-old driver who was swerving so badly he thought the driver needed medical attention. Trooper Rick Morgan said Andre Zapata, who turned 6 next month, did not respond to his lights but pulled over when he hit his sirens on the Interstate 15 in Ogden on Monday. I approached the vehicle and was expecting to find somebody who needed an ambulance or paramedics, Morgan said. But when the window came down, Morgan said he was pretty clear that it was a very underage driver who was behind the wheel. The boy was sitting on the edge of the seat. He reached the brake pedal, and the trooper said, when asked, Morgan said Andre told him he was going to his sister's house in California. The boy told another trooper that he wanted to buy a Lamborghini when he got there, and then flashed open his wallet showing his cash to purchase his dream car, $3. His parents were contacted and they came and took custody of their son and the vehicle. Adrian had long dreamed of owning his own Lamborghini and spends hours watching videos of luxury sports cars racing. His sister, Sydney Estrada, told the Desert News. On Tuesday, a local Lamborghini owner treated Andre to a ride up and down the street with the boy in the passenger seat. So that's a pretty interesting look on the boy's face. A surprise on the acceleration on this one view that you have to see to believe. He's like definitely enjoying it. Definitely. So, yeah, I wonder which YouTube videos he was watching that gave him inspirations to go to California to buy a Lamborghini. What YouTubers do we know that live in Utah? James? Okay, let's go on to the next story. BMW 8 Series Golden Thunder Edition makes quite a statement. BMW has just announced a special variant of the 8 Series dubbed the Golden Thunder Edition, available in a coupe, convertible, and grand coupe guise. All BMW 8 Series Golden Thunder Edition models come finished in either sapphire black metallic or frozen black metallic with a company contrasting gold accent. Among the gold parts include a graphics on the front bumper, which run along the side skirts and extend to the rear apron. Additionally, the wing mirror caps, 20-inch M light alloy wheels, and M rear spoiler are also finished in gold. Adding to the appeal of the 8 Series Coupe, Convertible, and Grand Coupe models in Golden Thunder Edition form is the fact that all come with the M Sport package as a standard feature. The unique Golden Thunder treatment carries over into the cabin, which features extensive BMW individual merino leather finish in black and complete with a special inscription on the headrest. The German car manufacturer also outfitted the 8 Series Coupe and 8 Series Grand Coupe Golden Thunder Edition models with an Alcantara Acolyte roof liner. Hands down, the most striking aspect of the interior is the aluminum mesh effect gold found throughout, including on the center console, which you would ordinarily expect to find carbon fiber or a piano black finish. All models also come equipped with a Bowers and Wilkins Diamond Surround Sound System. BMW has yet to announce pricing for the special edition model, but intends at starting production at its site in September. Interesting looking car. Once again, links to this article and images will be in the show notes. Okay, on to our next story. Give up beer for your truck? How about sex? And what about electric pickups? Never going to give up my truck? Never going to let it down? That's what Ford is asking. With the reveal of the 2021 Ford F-150, just recently announced, Ford has been doing a number of things related to trucks, such as releasing the results of a comprehensive survey of truck owners. If asked them how they use their trucks, what they like about them, and many other things. But the results that really caught our eye were related to what owners would give up before their trucks and how interested they are going to be to the electric model. As it turns out, as silly as the question is, there are a lot of things that truck owners would give up for a year before letting their trucks go. Number one was streaming services. With 82% owners ready to drop them, or surprisingly, was alcohol, which was close behind at 79%, followed by coffee at 71%. The numbers began to dwindle with other choices, though, as just under half of the respondents would give up their phone for a year versus their truck, and 40% would give up eating meat. The hardest sell was giving up sex for a year, which only got 38% of the owners. So what would you give up to keep your truck? You want, I'll have the Discord phone lines opened for you guys to call in if you want. And I'll be taking calls at the near the end of the program to get your guys' thoughts. So soon in a little bit, I'll open up the lines to where you could call in and get ready. So let's keep going. So we know now truck owners really love their trucks, but how do they feel about trucks going electric? Nationwide, 40% of the owners are excited about fully electric pickups, which isn't a majority, but is still a sizable chunk. While Ford didn't highlight every state, it did show that the majority of the truck owners in California, 62% specifically, are excited for electric pickups. That's not entirely surprising for a state with constantly high gas prices and plenty of perks for electric vehicles, such as access to carpool lanes. Yeah, you got that right. Which is funnier than heck here, especially in the northern California with three or four gas refineries, and yet we're paying close to $4 to $5 a gallon for fuel, whatever mix, be standard, unleaded, or diesel. Go figure on that one. My own concern is I just wonder if we even have yet the infrastructure yet in place for these electric vehicles. Just recently near my neighborhood, you know, the property owners of a shopping center gave up a small chunk of their parking lot to allow a third-party electric vehicle charging station be put in. So, don't know how that's financially viable, you know, to have transmission lines, you know, routed in to support a venture endeavor like that. So, let's see. And back to the story. Going deeper, Ford also asked what people would want from an electric truck to get them to switch to one. The top three choices received between 35 and 38 of the responses. The popular of those was the need for an electric truck not to compromise on power and capabilities. Next popular requirement was that there be enough places to charge their electric truck. Hey, yeah, right. And finally, reduced maintenance costs would convince some buyers of a fully electric pickup truck. If you'd like to see the rest of the survey results, you can picked them up in a PDF link down below or in the article. So we got for that one. Now we're going to move on to the next story. As some of you may have already known, last weekend, NASCAR driver, one of his, Bubba Wallace, one of his crew mates, found in the garage an alleged noose in their garage stall in Talladega last week. So this is one of the stories of the findings from the FBI investigating. So here's the story. FBI investigating noose as NASCAR driver and crew unite behind Bubba Wallace. Richard Petty is quoted as saying, "This filthy act serves as a reminder of how far we still have to go." Federal authorities on Monday confirmed they are investigating the discovery of a noose found in the Talladega Speedway garage stall of Bubba Wallace's NASCAR, only black full-time driver who successfully pushed the stock car series to ban Confederate flag as its venues earlier this month. U.S. Attorney Jay Towne said his office, the FBI, and the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division were reviewing the situation. Quote, regarding of whether federal charges can be brought, this type of action has no place in our society, Towne said. The racing was overshadowed by an extraordinary act of solidarity with Wallace. Dozens of drivers pushed the car belonging to Wallace to the front of the field before Monday's race. The 26-year-old Wallace was surrounded by all 39 other drivers in the moment before the race, and they were joined by their crews in a march down pit road as they pushed his number 43 to the front of the line. Wallace climbed out of his car and wept. It was a stirring move to support Wallace at the track in the heart of the South, where Confederate flags have flown for decades and were seen outside the speedway all weekend long by fans opposed to NASCAR's ban. The stock car series found in the South more than 70 years ago has tried to distance itself from the flag for years at the risk of alienating a core group of its fan base. At Wallace's urging, it went ahead with the ban as the nation grapples with social unrest largely tied to the George Floyd and unarmed black man who died in the custody of Minneapolis police. NASCAR has not outlined how it will enforce restrictions, and this weekend's race at Talladega presented a series with its biggest test in an entire early going. Disgruntled fans with Confederate flags drove past the main entrance to the Alabama racetrack prior to Sunday's race, while a plane flew above the track pulling a banner of the flag that read, "Defund NASCAR." Hours after the race was postponed by rain, NASCAR said the noose had been found. Sanctioning bodies vowed to do everything possible to find who was responsible and eliminate them from the sport. "We are angry and outraged and cannot state strongly enough how seriously we take this heinous act," the series said in a statement. "As we have said unequivocally, that no place for racism in NASCAR, and this act only strengthens our resolve to make the sport open and welcoming to all." Alabama Governor Kay Ivey said she was shocked and appalled by the vile act against Wallace, Alabama native. "There is no place for this disgusting display of hatred in our state," Ivey said. "Bubba Wallace is one of us. He's a native of Mobile, and on behalf of all Alabamans, I apologize to Bubba Wallace, as well as his family and friends, for the hurt this has caused, and regret the mark that leaves on our state." Richard Petty, seven-time NASCAR champion and owner of Wallace's famed number 43, was headed to Talladega to support his driver. Petty, who turns 83 next month, has not attended a race during the coronavirus pandemic and said in a statement he was enraged by the act of someone placing a noose in the garage stall of my race team. "There's absolutely no place in our sport or society for racism," wrote Hall of Famer, known simply as The King. "This filthy act serves as a reminder of how far we still have to go to eradicate racial prejudice, and it's galvanizes my resolve to use the resources of Richard Petty Motorsports to create change. This sick person who perpetrated this act must be found, exposed swiftly, and immediately expelled from NASCAR. I believe in my heart, this despicable act is not representative of the competitors I see each day in NASCAR's garage area. I stand shoulder to shoulder with Bubba yesterday, today, tomorrow, and every day forward. Reaction from Wallace's fellow drivers were immediate as they prepared for the rescheduled race Monday afternoon. Retired four-time champion Jeff Gordon called it a cowardly act, and Ryan Blaney, one of Wallace's closest friends, tweeted, "You're my brother and always will be. Don't let the people who are lower than life to try and bring you down." God help us, NASCAR driver Michael McDonald tweeted, "The level of evil it takes to do something like this disgusting. This is enraging and heartbreaking all in the same time." The 26-year-old Wallace has commented since a statement on social media Sunday in which he said, "The despicable act of racism and hatred leaves me incredibly saddened and serves as a painful reminder of how much further we have to go as a society and how persistent we must be in the fight against racism. As my mother told me today, they are just trying to scare you," he wrote. "This will not break me. I will not give in, nor will I back down. I will continue to proudly stand for what I believe in." Wallace has worn a shirt that says, "I can't breathe," over his fire suit and sported a Black Lives Matter paint theme in a race last month in Martinsville, Virginia. Wallace has said NASCAR assigned him 2 sheriff deputies for security at Martinsville after he called for the band. Wallace said he has found support among fellow drivers for his stance on the flag. He noted that in his tweet after the news announcement, quote, "Over the last several weeks, I have been overwhelmed by support from people across the NASCAR industry, including other drivers, team members in the garage," he said. "Together, our sport has made a commitment to drive real change and championing a community that is accepting and welcoming of everyone. Nothing more important than we will be deterred by the irreprehensible actions of those who seek spread hate." 5 years ago, former NASCAR chairman Brian Fence tried to ban flying the flags at tracks, a proposal that was not enforced and largely ignored. This year was different, and it was Wallace who led the charge. Wallace, whose father is white, was not always outspoken about racism. Even after Floyd was killed last month, he was not the first driver to speak out for racial equality. He said he began to find his public voice on racism after watching video in May of Ahmaud Arbery's fatal shooting in Georgia. He said he now recognizes he must not let his platform as a prominent driver go to waste. Tailgate is one of the more recluse stops on the NASCAR schedule, but the pandemic prompted the series, like all sports, to ban or sharply limit fans for months. With only 5,000 fans allowed in, the scene this week was dramatic departure from the Talladega norm, with plenty of room for social distancing and fans asked to wear masks. Fans were not granted access to the infield or the restricted areas of the Cup Series garage under strict new health guidelines. A very limited number of people can access the garage where the cars are kept. That would include crew members for each of the 40 teams, NASCAR employees, Talladega staff members, and any contracted safety crews or security guards. Drivers not even permitted to enter the garage, instead going directly from their motorhome to the race car to drive. They were never called to the cars Sunday because of the rain. Yeah, that was a mouthful on the article. And currently running the ticker address for the Discord address for you guys to call in and follow on this one. But this isn't the end of the story. There's more updates to the story, so stay tuned for that in a second. And a tweet from NASCAR's official Twitter account on the 23rd. This was a statement that NASCAR had made. See if I can blow it up here. NASCAR statement. The FBI has completed its investigation at Talladega Speedway and determined that Bubba Wallace was not the target of a hate crime. The FBI reported, concludes, and photographic evidence confirm that the garage door pull rope fashioned like a noose has been positioned there since as early as last fall. This was obviously well before the 43 team arrival and garage assignment. We appreciate the FBI's quick and thorough investigation and are thankful to learn that this was not an intentional racial act against Bubba. We remain steadfast in our commitment to providing a welcoming and inclusive environment for all who love racing, NASCAR. And more updates to that story from News Thud. Breaking also confirming the FBI confirms no crime and noose incident was garage pull rope. Breaking per Jeff Gluck at an earlier statement. FBI has just released a statement about the NASCAR noose incident at the Talladega indicating that it was a misunderstanding. No crime was committed. Noose was already there as early as last year. Joint statement from the U.S. Attorney J. E. Town and the FBI Special Agent in Charge Johnny Sharp Jr. regarding the noose found in NASCAR Bubba Wallace's garage at Talladega. On Monday 15, FBI agents concluded numerous interviews regarding the situation at Talladega Super Speedway. After a thorough review of the facts and the evidence surrounding this event, we have concluded that no federal crime was committed. The FBI learned that garage number 4, where the noose was found, was assigned to Bubba Wallace last week. The investigation also revealed evidence indicating authentic video confirmed by NASCAR that the noose found in the garage number 4 was in the garage as early as October 2019. Although the noose is now known to have been in the garage number 4 in 2019, nobody could have known Mr. Wallace. That's off. So basically, they're stating that, you know, the noose was there. And apparently, I guess Bubba Wallace made an interview on The View, or an interview on The View, and he was stated as saying, Bubba Wallace, on those who believe the noose incident was staged, it's simple-minded people like that, the ones that are afraid of change. They use everything in their power to defend what they stand up for instead of trying to listen and understand what's going on. Yeah, that's true. But here's some photographic evidence of what the story is showing from what the noose allegedly looks like. We won't know for sure since the FBI has turned over all of their finding evidence back to NASCAR, and it's in NASCAR's hands whether or not they're going to release it or not to the public. But I'm going to go over to some blow-up shots of these photos and others and let you guys decide, if you guys are watching this on my YouTube channel, to judge for yourselves. But here's like a blow-up here of a noose from the pole garage here, highlighted or circled. And here's a still grab from a video shot showing on the left from November 2019. See it hanging from the garage, number 4 garage. And now on the June 15th, obviously it looks like it was cut down during the investigation or after the investigation. To me, in my personal opinion, I don't think it was intentional. I just simply think that, look at the nature of NASCAR. What do most of these guys do off season? They like to fish. They have their bass boats. They go fishing. They go hunting. Most of these drivers and crew members, you know, it's in their blood, in the culture of the racing. So personally, I think this was tied by somebody who has fishing degree or an interest in fishing. And to make my case point, here's a common fishing loop, and it kind of looks like that's what somebody fashioned. And that's my opinion. So if you guys want to call in and comment down below, let's hear what you guys you suggest. And another follow-up story. Here we go. From a follow-up Apologies for not knowing who originally created this image, but it has been making the rounds on Twitter and turns out to be correct. If you see on the left, the photo, the rope was in the noose form, apparently as a handle last year, and then cut for evidence on Sunday. We have that. And CNN reporting on, also on the 23rd, basically stating, the FBI said the noose found in the garage stall had been there since last year, and Bubba was therefore not the victim of the crime. Quote, tied in 2019 or whenever, it was a noose, so it wasn't directed at me, but somebody tied a noose, Wallace said. And once again, there are links to this story and others that you can follow if you want to read these articles for yourself. So let's move on to something a little more cheerful. But first, I'm going to do a sponsor break for my audio podcast. So I'll be right back. Hey, did you know if you're listening to this podcast on Anchor FM that you, the listener, can help support this podcast directly by clicking on the support button that'll be in the show notes down below? If you can support it, it can help me create more content and possibly even eventually being able to bring in more live guests onto the podcast with enough support from you, the listeners. So I ask if you could please consider that. And also want to ask, throw out to you guys there, I've been debating whether or not to start a Patreon fund, if you guys would be willing to support that. But I have enough interest in doing that, I will consider doing a Patreon fund. Now back to the podcast. A man drove solo across America in 25 hours, 55 minutes in a rental Mustang. Fred Ashmore rented a Mustang GT, crammed it full of fuel tanks, and drove from New York City to Los Angeles in under 26 hours, shattering the solo cannonball record. You'll be forgiven for stifling a yawn as we divulge into the details of yet another cannonball record, and although the overall New York City to Redondo Beach, California record has allegedly been broken again by some folks who have not yet emerged from the shadowy worlds of a hearsay and conjectured, that's not the one we're going to tell you about today. What we are here to talk about is a record that so stupid, it's brilliant, and so crazy, it's just about what we've come to expect from the elapsed time on this ill-advised adventure have crept over closer to the 24-hour mark. We're talking about a solo run, one man, one car, a whole lot of gasoline, and a alleged 25 hours, 55-minute elapsed time. That's an average speed of nearly 108 miles per hour. Yes, this guy did this. He actually went out and rented a Ford Mustang GT and quickly made the modifications and set out to break this record. So let's go on with the rest of the story. If you've been following our coverage, you'll know that a lot of the people are excited last November when Arnie Coleman and Doug Abbott and Berkeley Chadwick destroyed a coast-to-coast record that stood since 2013 behind the wheel of a superbly prepared, blisteringly fast 2015 Mercedes-Benz E63 AMG sedan that carried them across this nation in 27 hours, 25 minutes. You'll also know that since then, we've offered limited coverage of the rash coast-to-coast record attempts made since then. And you'll recall some measures of desertion among aimed at the trio or quartet, who knows, of who borrowed someone's daddy's Audi, ratchet strapped a couple of marine fuel tanks into the trunk and blasted to glory while most of the country was closed as the global pandemic exacted its grim toll. But while most of us were twiddling our thumbs at home during the COVID-19 closure or mourning the loss of our jobs or dying, a handful of golf flaws endurance drivers were busy making tracks from New York to L.A., Several of these were solo runs, and those of us in the know watched amazed as the time it took one person to drive 2,800 miles nonstop, plummeted from the low to mid-30s to just under 28 hours. Even those times set only a few months ago were blown out of the water recently. Fred Ashmore, 44, of Hancock, Maine, rented a Mustang GT, removed the passenger seats and other interior accessories, strapped in enough extra fuel tanks to bump the car's capacity to around 130 gallons, made the trip from the Red Ball Garage in Manhattan to the Portofino Hotel in Marina in Redondo Beach with only one stop for fuel. Quote, the Mustang GT will not go any faster than 159 miles per hour, he told Road and Track. Anyone who tells you otherwise is lying. Yeah, most likely because of the fact that Ford has in the programming probably a speed limiter in the factory programming. Since you never bothered modifying the tuning on the car, it's safe to say that, yeah, you probably hit the speed limiter. Now, I wonder if he could have broke that record if he had the custom tuning with some custom software to remove the factory speed limiter and the ECU to maybe have gotten some better times. But then again, of course, I wonder if his miles per gallon would have gone way down more. So that's a question to be seen. But back to the story. It's important to note that Ashmore's time, while impressive, is not accompanied by the trove of third-party verified GPS data that has become the standard measure of proof in this nonsensical non-event, hence the allegedly qualifier. But he did take a shitload of screenshots of his glimpse tracking app while he was driving. He sent updates to his brother, his girlfriend, and his refueling team, and the images do not appear to have been doctored. Consensus among those who know him in that Ashmore, while batshit crazy, is not a liar. When you take a look at a solo pursuit that not rarely a challenge many people have taken on, said Ed Bullion, whose 28-hour and 50-minute record stood until November 2019, that's so off the wall and superhuman, I find it a lot more entertaining to watch as a spectator. On a team run, a driver drives, the passenger or passengers monitor the police detection devices, and the gyro stabilized binoculars, make calculations and corrections, and communicate with people on the ground. When you're on a team, if you're the spotter, you can take a break and close your eyes for a few minutes, said Dave Simpson, a truck driver and author who set a 34-hour, 33-minute solo run in 2015. On a solo run, you don't have a chance to unwind, even when you make a gas stop, because you're just so busy the whole time. Bolin, who has already breached the merits of painstakingly preparations, noted that the ad hoc nature of Ashmore's run was likely key to his success. In general, the risk inherent in making a cannonball run attempt have been managed by meticulous planning and strategy, he said. We have always known that throwing caution to the wind and just going as fast as possible could be another route to success. Until now, no one has been crazy enough to accept the risk, and Fred went full send. Ashmore was lucky and avoided the worst-case scenario. Today's high-speed drivers seem to be inching towards inexorably. Bolin is happy the cannonball safety record remains, for now, unblemished. Considering the amount of money previous record holders have spent on the aforementioned prep, Ashmore's effort shines as an example of extreme frugality. He said he didn't spend more than $3,000 on his whole trip, including the car, strapped in, Facebook, marketplace-sourced fuel tanks, and fuel, and the electronic countermeasures that have become the jour for anyone wanting to drive at these speeds without landing in jail. It was a drop in the bucket next to the budget for Thomans, who's professionally prepared AMG, or even the 10,000 Bolin had spent on his car and countermeasures leading up to his 2013 record run. Alex Roy, who Cutting Edge Electronics predated the criminalization of cop spotting social media apps when he said his set the first of the modern records in 2006, is in another league altogether, budget-wise. There's a movie about that. I believe if you go onto Amazon, you can find that movie. I just can't think of the name of it right now, but worth checking out. Ashmore, who participated in a number of C2C Express races, a vintage car cannonball-style coast-to-coast rallies run between 2015 and 2019, was already known as a bit of a risk-taker and a low-buck one at that. A true artist with cars others would likely write off as junk, he cobbled together a couple of remarkable entries for the 2018-2019 C2C runs. In 2018, he stuffed the drivetrain and suspension from a late-model Crown Vic beneath the body and frame of a 63 Ford Galaxy coupe he found abandoned in a ditch near his house. He had to cut off and reattach the roof to install the 187-gallon fuel tank he had built for it, but once the car was running and it had been painted from stem to stern with garage floor epoxy, it carried Ashmore and his co-driver all the way to L.A. from New York without refueling, making theirs the only truly nonstop run to date that anyone knows of. The next year, he picked up another basket case, a 1979 wide-body Mustang Cobra, he says was a prop car from Miami Vice and, based on its initial appearance, had apparently been used in a scene involving drug cartels and a car bomb. He raised it from the dead by installing some modern and very loud guts in its a span of 2 months and pulled off a 31-hour 47 time with two other drivers. So the gasoline bomb thing was nothing new. Ashmore had simply refined his installation and refuel plumbing technique and gotten into a modern car that was better able to handle high speeds. To make it work in a rental car, he removed the rear seat and front passenger seat to accommodate two of the extra fuel tanks he had acquired. He also stripped out the spare tire and jack and cargo area trim and strapped the third tank, a 51-gallon behemoth, into the car's neutered trunk. Two rear auxiliary tanks drained by gravity into the main tank through a factory access hole in the floor where the back seat was supposed to be. To get fuel from the third tank, the one riding shotgun on the floor right next to the hem into the main tank, Ashmore used a small electric pump powered from the car's cigarette lighter socket. Perfect. Perfect. Oh, you had a little bit of fuel smell when I filled the car, but nothing any great extent, Ashmore said. I had everything ventilated pretty well. The benefit of having all of that gasoline was particularly no downtime for refueling. A lot of it came down to planning, Ashmore said. He had calculated his fuel consumption pretty well. The Mustang ended up averaging about 12 miles per gallon, but instead of taking his chances at whichever gas station happened to be nearby when fuel ran low, he maintained contact with a couple of friends driving a pickup truck with 150 gallons of gasoline sloshing around in the bed-mounted fuel tank. They coordinated a meeting place just off of I-44 and refilled the whole collection of fuel tanks in under 8 minutes. Yes, under 8 minutes. Other than that, and approximately 25 minutes wait at an agricultural inspection station entering California, he didn't stop. If he had to urinate, he used empty Powerade bottles, adrenaline, and mental calculation for time, speed, and fuel consumption kept him awake. He didn't get pulled over by police, although he says there were close calls towards the end that he avoided by taking a spin around a series of cloverleaf turns. Compared with other recent attempts, excluding April's White Audi record run, Hashmark's setup was fairly low-tech. He had a laser jammer system, a radar detector, but only other goodies on board were a tablet running Waze and Google Maps, an iPhone timer, the car's built-in trip computer, and a CB radio. He actually used the radio to talk to some truckers into moving out of his way. I think they thought I was a pursuit vehicle or else they might have not have moved, he said. Ashmore's nosed the car up to the famous among the few who care sign at the entrance of the Portofino parking lot at 4:55 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. He had left the Red Bull garage at 6 a.m. Eastern Standard Time a day earlier. The lot was empty, so he took the obligatory I've arrived photo, parked down the street, removed the laser jammer heads, LED light bar, CB antenna, and auxiliary fuel tanks he had installed, and pointed the car east towards home. He says the few holes he drilled to install all his gear would be all but invisible to the rental car company. He's high on life right now, he said. Arthur Ashmore, Fred's older brother, who had kept in touch and advised him during the run, of everything we've ever done, this has probably made him the happiest. For his part, John Vaccara, who organized the 24-hour of Le Mans, fired 2904, a series of cannibal-style beater car rallies between 2007 and 2017 as low buck response to Roy's proliferated spending and flamboyant showmanship surrounding his 2006 record run, regard Ashmore's feat as wry counterness. There are so many of these runs now, it's hard to think of anything to say, he said. What is it like? What is this like? It's the 47th this year. I don't want to take anything away from Fred, but I just won 6 months with a record, with no records. Yeah, so that was a good one. I definitely encourage you guys to check out the Ed Bullion's VinWiki website, YouTube channel. He has two video stories of Fred Ashmore explaining the trips, and the second video going into detail more about what he did to prep the car for the run. And it's an interesting tale. So the story best told by Fred himself on the VinWiki website. I'll have in the show notes links to the VinWiki website so you can check out those stories. But it's definitely worth a read. Okay, so now I'm going to go off and highlight a few YouTubers that I want to highlight on their channels for you guys to check out. So hold on a second. Okay, first up we have here, good buddy of mine, Urban Explorer. As you can see here, he has a series of, he's building a new camper van from his old VW van. Bigger, taller, definitely worth checking him out. So definitely give him a follow. Links to his channel will be down below. Yeah, looking forward to seeing some of his latest videos. He has been gung-ho, him and his significant other, Emma, have really been pounding away at the construction of this build. So definitely worth giving him a shout out. Next up we have Mustang Medic, another good old Will, a buddy of mine who you may be seeing in the coming months on possibly if SEMA happens. Him and I may be doing some collabing work together during SEMA. So definitely give him a shout out. Check out his channel. Its link will be in the description down below. So give him a follow. Next up we have Condor Builds, a father-son team of, if you want to call it, the rebuild channels. They got definitely some interesting setups. One of their biggest projects was they did a version of an H2 Hummer to a convertible. And they're currently working on a wrecked Honda, I believe, Civic, that they're doing some work on. So definitely worth checking out. I need to pull up and watch them. But I started following Condor builds after, I believe, seeing, who was it? VTune Garage. Started watching his content of him building it, and somehow the YouTube algorithm recommended Condor builds and led to his, obviously it was first VTune's channel, then it went to Condor builds, who's also going to be in the links down below. Then it went to Goon Squad, two brothers, and their builds. I think when I first started watching Goon Squad, they were doing putting a Mustang together. I know even prior they had done a Jeep, but I had not caught their channel until after they started doing the Mustang build. And next up I want to have is good old Randy of Auto Auction Rebuilds. Definitely like seeing what he is up to in all of his builds, pride and tribulation. So he's definitely worth checking out. And of course we have Chris B is for Build. On all of his latest projects, he got some definitely endeavors. He has a series where he built last year for SEMA his Huracan build, where he literally, if you can see, he took the remnants of a Lamborghini Huracan, just the center monocoque tub section, and with other parts grafted in parts and made a manual shifted 6-speed Huracan with an LS powered powertrain, and it was displayed at SEMA. So I'll working on a video to where I think I'll be showing you that car in the coming weeks. I just need to put together the footage that I have available. I had a bunch of extra footage, but having difficulty times of trying to get my hands on it. But I'll see what I can do to bring a highlight video of what happened last year at SEMA for you guys. And of course, we have Life Apollos, reporting the news, so give him a shout out. If you're into the supercar community, YouTuber news, definitely go check his channel out. Definitely been growing and worth whatnot. Pretty much got that covered for all of the YouTubers. So, okay, for this next story, we're going to have a little fun. I'm going to read this one AP news story, and I've edited out some of the information, and I want you guys to guess which state this story is from, and for you to call in, trying to make this fun. So, if you're on Discord, the link is rolling down below, or also be in the show descriptions. I'll keep this active for a couple of hours to record the answers of what you guys think, as well as your comments from all of today's stories. So, let's get into that story. Man lets 12-year-old drive Jeep 85 miles per hour. So let's pull that story up. So read the story. A man facing felony charges after police said he let a 12-year-old girl drive his SUV and told her to speed because he wanted to be the, quote, cool father, end quote, even though he is not her dad. Sean Michelson, 41, told the arresting officer Monday he is friends with the girl's mother and that the girl and her friends were staying with him for a few days, according to court records. He said the girl had asked earlier in the day if she could drive his Jeep, so he thought it would be cool and that he was trying to be the cool father, end quote, the police report said. Michelson also told officers he had been drinking. Oh, yay. Officer Craig Yochum said in his arrest report that he spotted the Jeep making an illegal U-turn and then sped away at about 12:10 a.m. Monday. He followed the Jeep, reached the speeds of 85 miles per hour in a 45 mile per hour zone before he was able to pull it over. He said that when he asked the 12-year-old why she was driving so fast, she said Michelson told her to. Michelson is charged with child neglect, allowing an unauthorized person to drive, and causing a minor to become a delinquent for buying the girls vape pens. He says they requested, according to authorities. He was being held on bond on Tuesday. Court records did not indicate if he had an attorney. So yeah, guess which state this individual is from. Yeah, wanting to be the cool father. Yeah, comment down below and or call in to give me your feedback thoughts and guess where state this guy's from. I'll be tweeting out this link right now, so hopefully you guys can see the notice and you can call in. Discord lines are open, so let's see what happens.